Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes. Without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Messi, oh, Magnussen in at the back, it's a penalty. Szymon Marciniak did not hesitate. Messi is denied! Lionel Messi, denied from the spot by Hannes Halldorsen.
Hello, Ramblers. Andy here, and welcome to the latest Ramble Meets, where my guest today is Hannes Halldorsen, the former Icelandic goalkeeper. I say former, he's only very recently retired, but he's just got such a fascinating backstory. You might know him just as the goalkeeper from the Icelandic team that got to Euro 2016, breaking England's hearts, and then to the World Cup in 2018 in Russia, where he saved that penalty from Leo Messi. But there's so much in between, and there's the fact that he didn't become a professional footballer until he was nearly 30 years old. And now, of course, he's a film director. He's got a fantastic new film out called Cop Secret, which he'll be telling us about as well. It's such a varied and interesting tale. Do stay with us for it. This is Ramble Meets Hannes Halldorsen.
Where's the public glass, though?
So, Hannes, tell us about Cop Secret, because this is an idea that was in gestation for quite a while, wasn't it? Because I guess a lot of people listening to this won't realise that you've actually been a filmmaker for a pretty long time.
Yeah, that's right. I became a professional football player at 29, 30 years old, which is very unconventional for a football player. And while I was playing in Iceland as a semi-professional from 21, 2 until 30 years old, I was working on the side as a filmmaker or a commercial director. So yes, I have quite some experience as a filmmaker. And back in 2012-13, me and this group behind this movie, we sat down and started writing a script after having made a kind of a spoof comedy trailer for a comedy show they had, and there was some interest in seeing the whole movie. So we started writing it about 10 years ago, and then I became a professional football player, and we had to put it on the shelf for 6 years, and I never thought it was going to happen. But when I moved back to Iceland 3 years ago, 2019, we started talking about it again, and we decided to see if it would be possible to make it.
So the idea of you writing it, that came just before the Greta Salome Eurovision video in 2012, or just after? How did that work?
It was around the same time, around 2012. We made this trailer. They had, as I said before, they had this comedy show every Friday. Their main actor in the movie and his friend, who also stars in the movie, his partner, and they decided to have a trailer competition where they were competing against each other. Auden called me, and we made this trailer about this Super Cup who was in denial about this. Yeah, about his emotions, and they made another one, and we crushed them, and people thought it was funny. So yeah, that was about that time, 2012, and that's also when I was a director at Saga Film, which is I think the oldest production company in Iceland, and one of the most established ones. And I was directing commercials mostly at the time, but I made that music video, which until now has been my kind of only thing that I've been recognized for. Every time I did an interview, I was always asked about that music video, even though it wasn't a big thing back in the day to make. It was fun to make and all that, but that's kind of the thing that, you know, was always brought up when I was interviewed about my filmmaking career. But I did commercials most of the time.
So around that time, when you've done the Greta Salome Eurovision video and when you're writing this script, what are your feelings towards football? Is it just a bit of fun, or is there an aim to reach a certain level, or how were you looking at it?
It's quite a long story if we are going to go into my strange football career. But at that time, I was actually starting to gain some momentum in my football career. In 2011, I managed to sign a contract with KR, which is probably the most established club in Iceland and the biggest one. Some say, you know, it's won the most titles and all that. So that was a huge step for me, because 4 years before that, I was playing in one of the lowest leagues in Iceland, and I wasn't a football player at all. I didn't play any football from 14 to 19 years old. I was a decent goalkeeper when I was young, but then I got injured. My shoulder kept dislocating after a snowboard incident at 14, and I missed out all my development years. I didn't play one youth national team game, and I started playing football again at 20 after I had a surgery on my shoulder. So I had to start from scratch, from the bottom in the Icelandic league system. So I started in the third highest division and managed to work myself up to the Premier League in 3 years. And I didn't have any big plans. I was just gonna see with how long it would take me. I decided to quit football at 20, but then I had some fire still burning in me, and I decided I'm gonna give it one last go and see how far it's gonna take me. So things just kept rolling, and on both sides, you know, football kept growing. I was all of a sudden, I was playing in the Premier League, and at the same time, I was making commercials for bigger and bigger bigger companies. And at that time, 2011, I signed this contract with KR, and I had the season of dreams, you can say. I mean, we won the league and the cup, and I was voted the best player of the season, of, you know, the, like the player of the season. And I was chosen for the national team, and that was right before Lars Lagerbäck came on as the national team coach. He was the guy who changed everything for Icelandic football. So I managed to play one game with the national team right before he came, and we kept a clean sheet, and I played a good game. So I was really lucky in the way things kind of lined up. So, at that time I was feeling that maybe I can go somewhere with football.
So we'll come back to Lagerbäck and the national team. But at that point where you make your Iceland debut, you're what, 27, I guess?
28.
And you're not 28, and you're not a pro at that point, are you? So, I mean, how does that work? If you're talking about at that point, you're doing pretty well in the Icelandic Premier League. Are there a lot of players, I guess people will want to know listening to this, in Icelandic football who have other jobs like you? How many guys are professional there?
The league is technically semi-professional, but it's very serious. I mean, some of the clubs, or many of the clubs now, are paying, you know, similar salaries as the Scandinavian leagues, which are fully professional. But the step hasn't been taken, so it's still considered semi-professional. And most of the teams, they train at the afternoon, like 4 or 5 in the afternoon. So many of the players have some kind of a job, or are, you know, studying or something like that. But it's become a serious business, and people get paid quite, you know, well in our standard. So, but back in that day, almost everybody had something on the side. I mean, it's well known that the coach of the national team was also a dentist, and I think we have this we have this image of having like multiple talents. I think actually it's a result of us being so few. We have to somehow make things happen with the amount of people we have. We have to have radio stations, TV stations, hospitals, you know, parliament, newspapers, all that stuff. We have to somehow squeeze it out of this tiny population, so people are versatile. Most players have something else on the side, I would say.
So when it got to that point where you decided to go pro, I mean, was that when you went to Norway?
Yeah.
How much of a commitment was that to leave your, I don't know, your other job behind?
I mean, at the time, things were going really well for me also in the filmmaking business. I was, as I mentioned before, I was a very busy commercial director in Saga Film, and I was starting, I recently made my first kind of international commercial, which is a big step when you go and make it for another country. And there was buzz around making, you know, bigger projects. And this movie we are talking about now, it was also in the pipeline. So it was quite a big decision, but it was an easy one though, because I just felt that, you know, football is something that you have in a certain period in your life. And I wanted to experience this thing of being a professional football player, you know, just having nothing to do. I had lived like this double life for 10 years, and I was really getting exhausted also. It was getting too much. And I felt that if I wouldn't have become a professional football player at the time, and I was like, it couldn't have been any later. I was 29, turning 30. And I think if I wouldn't have gone at that point, I mean, it would have been too late. So I was really happy that Sandnes Ulf in Norway decided to go for me. A lot of clubs had looked into me, and they always asked, like, okay, this guy is playing in the national team and all that, but why is he like 30 years old still playing in Iceland and all that? But it had its reasons. I mean, I had to start from scratch, and really, I mean, I was 23 or 4 when I played my first game in the Premier League, and then I had to start developing as a goalkeeper. So so I had a very unconventional background, and that's why I didn't get, you know, I didn't manage to, I raised interest, but I didn't get through the door, you know. I made a 2-year contract, and I honestly thought that was going to be it. I was just going to play that contract, see how it goes, and move back at 31. And then I, Sagafield, my employers, they said, we're just going to wait for you and just go and get this out of your system, and then your chair will be empty and you can come back. But then things developed in another way, and I ended up playing abroad for 6 years and was a part of this unbelievable journey and adventure with the national team. And I ended up playing in four countries in 6 years, so things turned out differently.
So, yeah, you were in Norway, the Netherlands, Denmark, Azerbaijan with Karabakh, mm-hmm. who, of course, we've seen in European competition in the Champions League and Europa League in recent seasons. How did it change your life, dedicating everything to football? How much of an adjustment was that?
It was no problem. In the beginning, I felt like I was on a vacation, you know. It was one training a day, and that was just the easiest thing I could imagine. After having, you know, spent my life, you know, dividing my time between two very demanding jobs. I mean, filmmaking is very relentless and ruthless. You know, deadlines usually don't move. You have to, there are lots of factors that you have to take into play. The weather, you know, schedules, other people's schedules, stuff like that. So you have to choose a shooting day, and it's not possible to move it. And the games are not moving, and you have to be really focused and, you know, well rested and all that when you play the games. And then you have to, yeah, you have to really put heart and soul into filmmaking if you're going to do it well. And it's pressure and it's lots of things. So I was burning out, and I really welcomed the opportunity to just focus on one thing, and I felt it was really easy in the beginning, and I went all in, you know, as a football player. Trained a lot, I changed my physical appearance, and I was really fit, and I played a very good season, my first season in Norway, and managed to raise some interest in myself. So I just enjoyed it. I really loved it. It was a small club. It was, you know, very small in the international standard, but for me, just to show up on training at 10 o'clock and having nothing else to do and playing at bigger stadiums, stuff like that, I just loved every second of it.
And talking of underdog stories, you're playing at Bodø/Glimt for mm-hmm. a while, who since have gone on to become the northernmost football yeah. champion in the world ever for 2 years mm-hmm. in a row. Such a small, remote club. Is there anything you saw at Bodø/Glimt that made you think that they could go to this next level at the time?
Not in a million years. And I'm so happy for them. I mean, I got to know that club, and it really has a place in my heart. It helped me in a crucial stage on my career right before the Euros. And I got to know the people in the club and the town. And I just think it's amazing. I mean, when I was there, it was a club which was like going up and down between leagues, you know, there's mm-hmm. the highest and the second highest, and that was kind of its standard. Maybe once in a while they could have a good season where they would be like close to the top or something, but that was their level. And for this to happen, I would never have guessed it in a million years. They actually tried, they called me almost every year after I played there and checked the possibility for me to come back, and they did it the last time they did it was 2020, before the 2020 season, and right. before that they had taken the second place, and they were trying to convince me to say that you know, this time we're going for the title, and they were calling me like very shortly before the season in Iceland, so I had my commitments. It was tempting, but it didn't have possibility to go. But they were saying, we're going for the title this year. And I was like, yeah, okay, that's a good one. I mean, you had this fairy tale season last year, second place, congratulations, that was awesome. But this time that's never going to happen with Bodø/Glimt to go win the title. And then they just crushed the league completely. And then again, and they just keep this consistency. And they are doing it with players who were young when I was there. And I never thought they were like going to do something, to be honest. So I'm just super happy for and surprised and everything about that, you know, unbelievable thing.
I guess the football miracle that everyone's more familiar with listening is the Iceland national team getting to Euro 2016, getting to the 2018 World Cup as well. But that wasn't an overnight success as well. A lot of preparation went into that in terms of the team, in terms of what Lars Lagerbäck did, in terms of infrastructure, training. From the point where you made your debut for the Icelandic national team to getting to Euro 2016, what changed? How did it develop?
When I made my debut, it was 2011, and it was like the last moments of the old times, you can say, where before things changed. And I say this with full respect of everybody who was involved, but, you know, everybody knows that things, you know, changed when we got somebody with international experience and, you know, because things had stayed the same in a certain way with the federation, with everything around with the team. And the game I played, the debut, it was against Cyprus at home. It was the last game, a home game in that group. And it was the only game we won. We had played a bad qualification. And I think there were like 3,000-4,000 people in the stands. We don't have the biggest stadium in the world. It takes 10,000. So, but it felt half empty. And that was the standard back in the day. But then Lars came on and he came on exactly at the right time because we had this golden generation of players coming up. They had reached the Euro Under 21 Championship finals, which was the first time we have done that, and we're beating big nations on the way, like Germany, crushing Germany, and like keeping consistency for a long time, which was what we needed. We always had good players, you know, a few good players like Heidegger Johnson and maybe one or two playing in the Premier League, one or two playing in, you know, big leagues. But that's like 3-4 players in a team of 11. That's not enough. You need like 7-8 high-level players if you're going to compete against bigger nations who are all stacked with quality players. And we got this generation of young guys born in 88, 89, 90. And they had this consistency, this quality that made it possible for us to build a team which was compatible against bigger teams. And then we got Lagerbäck coming in at the right time, taking this fantastic group of players and molding them, and everybody was ready to listen to what he said, and this was exactly what this group need, because they were also like a little bit flamboyant, you know, thinking that they knew everything. They had been playing in big leagues for a long time. So they needed a guy like that. And then you had guys like me and some of the defenders who are not playing at the same level, but we all had something. We brought something to the table, some kind of, the guy in playing in the defense in front of me, he's the best football brain I've ever known. His name is Kári Árnason. He played in the lower leagues in England.
Yeah.
And he had a way of seeing football like in slow motion. He knew everything that was happening, why everything happened. He was like the orchestrator of the defense. He was never mentioned when you were talking about the big names in the team, but he was like a really, really big part of the heart and soul of the team. So we managed to somehow assemble a team which was just fantastic. I mean, we were top 20, 15 best teams in the world. I mean, we didn't lose at home for 6 years, I think. So it was really a good team. It wasn't like luck. We managed to stay for four competitions. We were first to second place or third, when third was like for qualification spot. So for four competitions, we either qualified or played in the playoffs. I want to mention one thing also, because when this happened, people in Iceland were so thirsty and having a good football team, because we had been, poor for such a long time, that when it started to go our way, people just exploded with happiness and support and football enthusiasm. So for 6 years, I mean, I'm getting goosebumps talking about this, for like 6 years or something, the stadium was sold out like in 15 minutes or something. And it was crazy. We changed this bad football stadium we have into like a fantastic home ground. And there was just energy. Positive energy in the country the whole way around for 6 years, like a football frenzy.
I mean, it's funny you should say that, actually, because at Euro 2016, I spent a bit of time with Icelandic supporters around some of the grounds, and I went to a couple of the games. I was at the first game against Portugal in Saint-Étienne, and I remember what an incredible amount of Icelandic people there were. I mean, they said what, something like 7 or 8% of the population was in France. Yeah. It felt though, by the same token, like everyone knew each other. You'd get talking to fans and they'd bump into people they knew. I think we randomly bumped into Gudni Bergsson's brother before that game against Portugal. And then we bumped into the mayor of Reykjavik. It felt like this real family experience. Is that your experience of it?
Absolutely. And I think what you're talking about is a mixture of both us being few. So yes, I mean, everybody knows somebody who knows somebody. I mean, you're always one phone call away from anything you can say. And there were many people in France. And then you also have this feeling of, I mean, being there finally for the first time. People just went there and everybody acted like they were friends or family or knew each other. I mean, I've never experienced such harmony in kind of being or togetherness or being positive. I mean, there's always, people are always fighting. If you think about politics or if you think about whatever, there's always these clashes. But at this moment, I mean, we were just, there was nothing but joy. Everybody was on the same boat and people were just high on life.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Oh,
The goalkeeper didn't know a great deal about it, but he managed to make the save nonetheless. Halderson with a smart reaction stop. It was a great pickup by Cristiano Ronaldo and a powerful downward header.
Oh, what a chance this is for Portugal.
How did that first game against Portugal change the expectations within the team? Because obviously you're aiming to go there and do your best. I mean, Portugal end up winning the tournament, which makes it look even better in retrospect. But you had quite a busy game in that first game. But you get the Bjarnason equaliser, you get the draw. And speaking to both Portuguese and Icelandic players about it, Portugal were really knocked out of their stride by Iceland. So how did you guys feel about that? And how did you feel? How did that set you up for the rest of the competition, I guess?
It was a huge point for us, very important. We had the goal when we went into the tournament that we were going to qualify. I mean, that was definitely our goal. And we thought it was possible. We thought we would have to beat Hungary and then we would have to get a point from one of the other games. And to be honest, I mean, when going into the Portugal game, yes, we had confidence. We had gotten good results for many years against big nations. So we had belief in ourselves, but you always have this other side also like whispering that they could like kill you. You know, you're playing at the biggest stage you ever played and against Ronaldo, all these players, and they could humiliate you if they have their day, you know? Mm. So you're also afraid of that possibility. And football is funny because there's such a small difference between being humiliated and getting a fantastic result. I mean, we got a draw, 1-1, amazing. But they had like 10 shots or something on the goal and 15 total, I think, were, if you count the ones that didn't hit the target. Mm. So, but we somehow you also make your own luck. And we were good at defending, good at throwing ourselves in front of shots or making the shots difficult so that I would be able to save them. I mean, we really like, in every second of every game with our hearts and souls. And there was also one weapon we had, especially playing against big nations like Portugal and England. I mean, they had all the pressure in the world on them. They just felt like if we don't beat this team, it's going to be such a humiliation. So when they started feeling that it was difficult and they felt that it was okay, it's possible that we might not, I mean, they actually can do something, I think maybe panic started to you know, kick in a little bit, and it becomes a difficult feeling for the bigger team.
And of course, you get to the quarterfinal in the end. I've got to ask you, because we're talking to you from London, about the England game in Nice. Mm-hmm. How far is that up there with the biggest games in your career?
Top three, I would say. Maybe the biggest one. It's up there with the Argentina game, the first game we play in the World Cup. And maybe the Austria game, the game before when we qualified for the game against England, which is the craziest experience I've ever had. I mean, we won that game by scoring with the last kick of the game. At Stade de France with 10,000 Icelanders at the stands after having defended for 30 minutes. And it's just the most unbelievable feeling I've ever had. And then going into the England game, getting this historical result. It's also another thing about that. Iceland had been hoping to get England, you know, in every draw for every qualification for decades. You know, we never got England. There's lots of interest for English football. Everybody has a team, you know, which they root for. And, you know, everybody is rooting for, or a lot, many people are rooting for England in every, you know, major tournament. So for us to face England was like a lifelong dream, you can say. And so for us to finally do it at that stage, once we had reached our goal, gone through the group at the Euros, and then we face England finally. It was just like a dream come true. And I think we went into that game without pressure. You know, we had just gone through the group, which was our goal, and everything after that was just like a bonus. And yeah, and while the pressure was on England to beat us, so I think that was in our favour.
You talked about Kari Arnesen reading the game so brilliantly. Got such experience with British football, of course, as you say, in the lower divisions in England, at Aberdeen. Obviously, off the back of that, ended up playing Champions League with Malmo. Mm-hmm. But in terms of preparing you for playing a British team, how important was he?
At that time, we were not... I don't think we got too deep into that. We were like a well-oiled machine, and the defenders. I knew what I was getting into. I knew I was going to play world-class players like we had done many times before. I also knew that this was not going to be like a typical lower league game in England, you know. It's it's going to be something other than that when you have Harry Kane and those guys, you know, shooting at you. So I went into the game like every other game, just kind of emptying my mind and dealing with every situation as it came. I wasn't like setting myself up to a big fight in the corners or something like that. So, but yeah, it wasn't anything special before that game, I think.
So fast forward to the World Cup in 2018 in Russia. You talked about Argentina being mm-hmm. up there. This is different because you've qualified for a second successive major tournament. And even though Iceland is a small country, people expect something of you now. And you personally deliver by delivering the point against Argentina with that penalty save from Leo Messi. So tell us about going into the tournament and tell us about the big moment.
Yeah, I think reaching the World Cup by winning the group, the qualification group, is one of the biggest sporting achievements I can imagine. Mm. We were in the group with Croatia, Turkey, Ukraine, Finland, and Kosovo. And I mean, Croatia ended up playing in the final in the World Cup and had a fantastic team at the time. Mm. So it's difficult enough to reach the second place, but that's not enough in the World Cup, because if you reach the second place, you're going to be facing another huge opponent in the playoffs, and you're going to be ranked the lower, you know. So we would always be facing like Italy or, I don't know, Portugal or something. Mm. So for us to go and win the group was actually the best chance, and to manage to do that was unbelievable. So we went into the World Cup a little bit, I think, with the same feeling as with, in the England game. We were there and everything else was a bonus, but we had this pressure. I mean, we had qualified through our group in the Euros, and we had a massive belief in ourselves. So we definitely went into the group to go through. And it's funny that you mentioned the expectations, because, you know, we were playing in the World Cup, which for a normal country would maybe be equivalent of just winning the World Cup or something. Mm. But still, people talked about the World Cup as a disappointment because we didn't go through. You know, we were one goal away from going through this fantastic group. If we would have scored, it was 1-1 against Croatia, like the last 10 minutes. Everything had lined up the way we wanted. Argentina was winning against Nigeria, and we needed that one goal. And we were really hammering Croatia. And if we would have scored that, and I know ifs and buts and all that, but it would have been the biggest sporting achievement in our history, definitely. Mm-hmm. But they, you know, had a transition and scored 2-1, and we were out of the competition, which was a huge disappointment and wasn't what we had planned. I think the biggest disappointment was the Nigeria game, where we just, we went into it. Yeah, we went into the second half with our heads not right, and we lost that game 2-0. That was the key game for us. Mm. But we still had a chance in the last game, and we were so close, but we didn't manage. We knew that from the World Cup that the key to qualifying was the first game. To get something out of the first game is extremely important. So we definitely thought that after, you know, drawing against Argentina, we were gonna do it. I mean, we were sure we were gonna do it. Mm. Because that was the long shot to get something out of that game. And for me, I mean, it's obviously one of the biggest experiences of my life. I had set myself a goal back in 2011-12 when I had played one or two games in the national team. Then I set myself a goal. I'm going to play 50 games for Iceland. That was my plan. And I felt like if I do that, I have been the number one goalkeeper for 4 or 5 years. I can be super happy with my career. And that was my goal. And it ended up being my 50th game, the Argentina game. So I reached that goal at that day. And, you know, it was a unique situation, completely crazy. And then you have this moment, the penalty, you know, going into a game like that, you have this one in a million fairy tale idea of like a dream scenario. And you never think it's going to happen, and you have lots of things have to fall your way for something like that to happen, but somehow it did. And it's now the thing that's, you know, the it's not the Eurovision Song Contest video I'm recognized for anymore. Now it's the Messi penalty. And it changed my life, this moment, and was probably my best game for Iceland. It was not just the penalty, everything about that game, I think I was really feeling good. And I had to deal with lots of situations, and I was very happy with that game.
I mean, you said that as a script for a film, you would turn your nose up at it because it would just be too unbelievable. Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, if you just talk through it, I mean, at 20 years old, I was a chubby video nerd making you know, low budget music videos, and I had called my coach and said I quit, I'm not playing football anymore. I had had too many obstacles. I almost lost my finger in a scouting location accident shortly before that. And so I was completely out of it. But then I felt like, okay, there's something burning in me. I want to make one last go. Well, let's see where it's going to take me. And it took me to the first game Iceland has ever played in the World Cup, like a tiny nation playing against Argentina, playing against Lionel Messi, and then ending up saving a penalty against maybe the best football player in history. You wouldn't buy that script.
So
it's too much.
You've just retired in March, and now you're fully into you're fully concentrating on your filmmaking. You did manage to win the Icelandic Premier League again with Val before before you stopped, but it's been more difficult for the national team. Obviously, they've had problems off the pitch. I mean, does it hurt to see it how it is now? And what do you think Iceland can do to get back to a competitive level?
Yeah, that's a whole other discussion. And definitely, I mean, I retired from the national team during very hard times, and completely the opposite to what I was describing before, when the harmony and the togetherness was like completely genuine. When I retired, there were difficult times off the pitch, as you mentioned, and some of our biggest names were having problems, and I definitely would have chosen things to you know, end in a different way, and for that these things would not have been part of everything. I mean, because they put a shadow over the whole thing. But you know, the national team and this adventure gave me so much and so many great memories that I choose to not let it ruin my experience, which was unbelievable. So it's quite difficult now if you think about football wise. I mean, we have a younger generation coming up trying to find their footing, and they're struggling a little bit. And I mean, it's always going to be difficult for Iceland to create a team which is compatible against bigger nations who are better on paper. We need lots of things to click. We need to be better than them at something. We used to be like really good at set pieces and really good tactically, and then we had this you know, we had a few very skillful players who could take us, you know, to the next level. Plus, we had this team spirit and this intangible thing that you have to have also if you're going to have a good team. So when this happens again, or if this happens again, I don't know. I think it's going to be very difficult because we had such a good mix, so many elements that worked. But at least we have shown that it's possible. You know, people are not brought up anymore thinking that we are never going to reach a final competition, because we have shown that it is definitely possible. And that's, I hope that's going to raise the level and you know, make it easier for the next generations to try to be successful.
Finally, Hannes, tell us about Cop Secret that's come out, that's had a lot of acclaim internationally. And I suppose in a way, it's a bit like your football career. It started through something small and gradually it's built up and up and up into something that's really big. Tell us a bit about it.
Yeah. Like you say, it's in many ways similar. I mean, it was this tiny comedy trailer 10 years ago, which I made with one cameraman and this main actor, and it was really cheap and we did it in 2 days, and then it became a movie, and it was only supposed to be a movie for the Icelandic moviegoers, like something fresh for people in this country. And I never expected anyone outside of Iceland to see it, but it was made with, you know, love and passion, and I think maybe that shines through. So there's something in it that people seem to connect to, but I was so surprised when we started getting first phone calls about this movie being accepted to film festivals, and you know, that people seem to like it who are not in Iceland, because there are so many local jokes and so many things that I thought you would need to be Icelandic to get, but I guess there are more things in it. So it's just, it's been an adventure as well. We premiered it in Locarno, which is a huge festival. We were there in a fantastic setting in our nicest suits and being driven between red carpets and photo sessions and press conferences. And we just felt like we were being dumped in this movie star world, which was unbelievable with this tiny Icelandic movie. So, yeah, it's opening some doors and it's been an amazing ride. And really is helping me transition from, you know, retiring from football, which is always going to leave a hole with everybody who enjoyed playing football. It's always going to be a transition. But for me to have this gives me a lot.
And you're taking Reykjavik to the world all over again for a second time in a different field.
Yeah, you can say that. Reykjavik is looking a bit different than usual. This small, peaceful city where the police doesn't carry guns and nobody speaks in one-liners, and obviously we don't have any supervillains. It's looking differently in this movie, and it's a joy that more people outside of Iceland, you know, get the joke.
Well, look, thanks so much for your time, Hannes. I'll wish you all the luck in the world with it.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Football Ramble Presents is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.